Whether you're just wrapping up the night shift or on your way to start the day, we got what you need.
Welcome to the morning shift.
It's the most mid team in history.
A whole new way to start your day with nationally televised reporter Tiffany Blackman.
Any pizza for me can be a personal.
Can't wait.
Former Falcons and Alabama offensive lineman Mike Johnson.
I've had my butt chewed by Nick Saban a few times.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
And Atlanta sports radio guru Bo Morgan.
Do you know who I am? I'm Squid Bill.
You tell him I'm coming. And hell's coming with me, you hear?
It's a new experience.
And a new take on a sports morning show.
The Morning Shift is brought to you by Greater Atlanta Erie McDonald's. Download the app for great deals.
The Morning Shift is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Tiffany, Mike, and Bo.
It's actually Tribble, Mike, and Bo. Welcome to The Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So, gentlemen, I was at the urinal this morning, and T.J. Watt hit me. He's just everywhere.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I tried to chip him for you, but...
I was going
to
say, did the stall get a chip from Kyle Pitts?
A feeble chip. Man, he was playing with his hair on fire yesterday. Not what we expected or wanted coming out the gate. The final score yesterday, Chris Boswell, 18. Falcons 10.
Yeah, I was going to say, he had to have gotten the game ball, right? He also punted one time, too.
He did.
Look, man, we did the post game yesterday. How was the flyover? Because I know that... Like, you take callers, you're around the fans, you get more of the post-game vibe than I think we do being in the studio. I'm curious what the flyover was like.
First of all, massive thanks to the lovely Evita McDaniel. She does marketing over there at the Signia Hilton. She smells really good, too, and just very, very accommodating.
You smelled her?
Well, you couldn't help it. She
had an aura.
She had an aura. Yeah, it wasn't, I didn't smell her neck or anything inappropriately. But Neston 4, what a beautiful sports
bar. I told you that was pretty cool, wasn't it?
Man, I had the... tater tots covering the shredded Wagyu beef. Then I had a nice burger as well. And it was all Steeler fans in there yesterday.
Can't imagine
why. 90%. What was the stadium like? What percentage?
You tell me, Mike. I thought 65-35. I thought the Falcons fans outnumbered it, but I thought there was a good representation of Steelers.
A vocal minority.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't have given them 35%. I thought it was more 75-25. And shout out to the Falcons fans, because not only were they there in good numbers, I thought their hair was on fire. Before the game, I thought they were making their presence known. Steelers definitely had a presence. I'm not gonna lie about that.
Yep.
But when you saw something happen, you saw a lot more white Falcons flags than you did yellow terrible towels. I'll just say that. So I thought that was a good sign, and I kind of tweeted it out. I was like, man, it's the there's a presence, but these Falcons fans are out for blood in this building right now. So it was good to see.
And Arthur Smith was on the field yesterday, not up in the booth. What kind of any palpable response to him when he sauntered out onto the field?
Not that I noticed, but I don't know that he didn't just. I don't know that any of the fans would have just noticed him. He wasn't put on the halo board or anything like that. I mean, some people close to the tunnel might have looked, but I didn't notice anything over the top for sure.
But after the game, as I predicted, though, he took off his shirt and was swinging it over his head and did a lap around the field, saying, "This is my house." Right?
Kind of disappointed. I thought we maybe should have done something like the Hawks always do, and maybe put something in a timeout of Arthur Smith, "Welcome home, Arthur. Thanks for all the, thanks for the 21 wins." But I thought Arthur actually did a decent job. For what they did, their offense didn't do a lot, but he didn't really overcomplicate it. Basically the game plan to me for Pittsburgh was play to our strengths, which is defense, keep the ball on the ground for the most part, and let Chris Boswell hit 5-6 field goals.
And that 57 yarder would have been good from 77. It looked like that was just. He boomed it.
They made it in the red zone, if I'm not mistaken, one time. And that was that last drive where the Falcons got the stop. Other than that, they weren't in the red zone at all. I mean, his field goals were 57, 51, 44, 56, 40. And then the 25-yarder late. I mean, holy smokes. Like, that was unbelievable from Chris Boswell. And I told Arch, as soon as the game was over, we're walking down the locker room to do our post-game interviews, and I said, well, I didn't have on the bingo card that you would lose the opener without giving up a touchdown.
Yeah.
That one I didn't have.
I think the beauty of that, too, is that, like, a lot was made of Justin Fields. A lot was made of Arthur Smith. A lot was made of Russell Wilson not playing, everything else. And, yes, they won, and that's the gut punch. But it wasn't like a celebratory offensive just juggernaut. You didn't run the Fields package and score four touchdowns and do all the other things. So it wasn't like they went out of the stadium with a fist raised high. It was like
they're like, well, we escaped with one there.
Yeah, I mean we got a little bit lucky. Our game plan worked a little bit better than theirs did offensively, and that's why we come out of here with a victory. So and that was not hard to do, let's be honest.
I'll tell you one thing about Justin Fields, what always makes me kind of fear him a little bit. He can look so awful. A botched snap, a terrible read, just very inaccurate throw. You look like he's just totally out of sorts and lost, and then he'll tuck it and run for 50 yards, or he'll hit a big pass to like a George Pickens or something. That's what he does.
Should have known it wasn't our day on the opening snap for Pittsburgh offensively. He botches the snap.
And we didn't get the fumble.
And No, it wasn't even that. It said they falled forward for 3 yards and gained. They gained 3 yards on a botched snap.
Like,
I think he botched about three of them at some point in the game, because there was another one where he was able to regain it, just kind of throw it back to Najee Harris, and he got a good game. Man, it was a physical game yesterday. I mean, look, we'll get to the deficiencies that the offense had on the next segment, or maybe here in a second. But we got to take our hat off. And I'm wearing my Cancun Mexican Grill hat. Take my hat off to the defense, because Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, Eddie Goldman, Matthew Judon, dude, Justin Simmons was flying around. Those guys played phenomenal yesterday. The linebackers and I thought Troy Anderson looked pretty good coming back. So did Nate Landman played well. Caden Ellis, the defense was absolutely phenomenal. George Pickens caught a few. Probably to me, the best throw of the day for Justin Fields was, I think it was the late in the second half. He makes the throw to Pickens where he basically threw Pickens into the ball because AJ had good coverage on the outside, and Justin Fields did a good job of putting it on the inside part there, Mike, and he basically just threw Pickens into the ball.
Yeah, there was a couple nice plays that Justin Fields did make yesterday, and let's be honest, it was a very Justin Fields-esque game. There were some throws that I'm sure he'd like to have back, but very few negative plays. And that's the beauty of what Justin Fields is.
Took care of the ball.
He took care of the ball for the most part. Even when things broke down, he's able to – I mean, you saw it on the second play of the game. He rolls out, steps out from behind – his offensive line, he can't get anything and gains like 8 yards with his legs. And that's the beauty of Justin Fields. Now, you're going to have throws. There was one along the sideline to Pickens. There's one behind Najee Harris where we talked about it earlier. Najee kind of looks back and stares him down. So there's going to be those plays, but more times than not, he's going to get you out of trouble. And that's all he had to do yesterday, right? I mean, you look at it and you're like, oh, Justin Fields. That's all he had to do was just keep him out of trouble, keep him out of negative stuff, because the Falcons' offense couldn't do anything.
I guess credit to him. He didn't lose his mind and try to do too much. He goes, wow, our defense is really balling, so I can just relax and just execute the game plan.
Well, and, they didn't put too much on him either, though. They didn't put him. I mean, there were situations where Mike just kind of alluded to it. What was it, Mike? It was the second – it was the second field goal they got. They get inside like the 30, and then they do this little trick play with Pickens. They lose 10 yards. It's two straight run plays after that, and they let Boswell kick. I think that was the 51-yarder because they knew they had that. In hindsight, if Kirk Cousins would have made some better decisions with the ball, we might be talking about a different result, because I felt he pressed and made some bad decisions, which cost you. And I know we'll get into that on the other side.
Yeah, it's the post-mortems, Falcons Monday. It's also a man-up Monday. How do we do with our picks? That's coming up at 6:40. But 18-10 the final. Falcons 0-1 as they head up to Philadelphia for a Monday night game next week. It's a morning shift. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
A complete recap of our Falcons game is on Falcons Monday.
You know what I mean?
Falcons Monday is presented by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. Our Falcons play here.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured Hire. Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Welcome back on this Man Up Monday. Triple in for Tiffany with a Squid and Bo. We got Day Squared and Dylon. And gentlemen, I guess something felt normal and oddly comfortable yesterday. The Falcons, even under a new regime, they lose another very winnable game. It just drives me crazy after a while. How many have just slipped through the fingertips over the past several years?
I want to kind of highlight your term normal right there, because I think that there was something, and you felt it as the game went on. It was like, and I said this yesterday in postgame, Rob, T.J. Watt came out and didn't really know what the Falcons' game plan was in the first series. And you can tell. I mean, Caleb McGarry, I think like five of the six dropbacks on the first series, he's left on an island and does a good job. It's like T.J. Watt's a little more hesitant. And as the game goes on, T.J. Watt is like, prove to me that you're not going to bootleg. Prove to me that you're not going to run a draw. Prove to me that there's not going to be a play-action pass. And none of those things ever happened. There were no draws. There were no bootlegs. There were zero play-action passes for a quarterback that has had a ton of successful history on play-action passes. And so when you talk about normal, I guess, is a good word for it, because there were a zero, and I mean zero, wrinkles in this game plan for the Falcons yesterday.
I want to ask you guys what you think about this. I think that first drive, Bijan gets that little shuttle pass. You think he's going to score. Peyton Wilson makes a brilliant tackle on him, keeps the Falcons out of the end zone. Does that change the complexion of the whole afternoon if you score on that first drive, but Peyton Wilson makes that big tackle?
Yeah, absolutely. It changes the complexion.
That was a great tackle. Open field, one-on-one against somebody as gifted as Bijan. He's a rookie out of NC State.
Well, he made a couple of good plays, and I think that kid is another player that they'll have that you'll say, oh, another great defensive player that Pittsburgh has in their front seven. The reality of the situation is it's a 7-0 ball game. When that's a victory for them, because they knew they were limited offensively. Look, and I was just tweeting with Mr. Yoes, always a big listener. He's like, oh, Justin Fields did. He led 6 scoring drives. Well, reality is you turned the ball over 3 times. You gave them 6 points off 2 turnovers, basically. But one field goal was inside 40 yards. Offensively, they did nothing. If you scored 7 points there, you know, it changes it, because now it's a 7-3 game after that. You might have put some pressure on their offense to do more than just get on the other side of the 50 and kick field goals all day. You didn't do anything offensively that put real pressure on them at any point in the game.
Let me bring y'all in on a conversation, too, happening on the socials, and I mentioned this to Bo this morning. Field Yates tweeted, interesting note from ESPN Stats and Info, and it's definitely something I noticed along the way as well. Falcons were in pistol or shotgun on 96% of the snaps. Of the 22 snaps out of shotgun, 0 design runs. Of the 26 snaps out of pistol, 81% run. There was no question, and that's kind of what I mean about T.J. Watt. And we're going to talk a lot about Caleb McGarry and Kyle Pitts, kind of broke down the numbers on that and how often Caleb McGarry was getting help. There was nothing to keep anybody off balance defensively. And I think it's interesting to look at the follow-up
tweets.
They
were that predictable formation. That's crazy.
You look at Damian Woody responding, he goes, Kirk Cousins isn't healthy from that Achilles. And Field Yates says that's the only explanation that makes sense, right? And that's kind of where I'm at, right? I think that there is a lot of blame to go around. I think Kirk Cousins played awfully. I think Caleb McGarry was overmatched. And I think that Zach Robinson, for whatever reason, I don't know. I want to believe that there is a deeper reason. But for whatever reason, was the most vanilla game plan I think I've ever seen in the NFL. I mean, just straight up. And I'm not saying that to overreact. It was the most vanilla game plan I've ever seen. It was one, maybe two run plays. The offensive line blocked wide zone every single play. Now, sometimes you inserted Charlie Warner. Sometimes there was a slice back. One time you had a pin and pull and Jake Matthews gets in the flat. Other than that, you saw one run play and you saw a drop back pass.
And let's be honest, it's not like Kirk Cousins is the second coming of Michael Vick out there. He's not a guy that wants to move anyways. He wants to stand there and wait for things to come open. That's part of the and I hate to even use this phrase after, 3 turnover game, but elite processor, right? That's kind of what it is. Even on the touchdown play to Pitts, he moves out of the pocket, makes an accurate throw on the go. Why didn't you do more of that, though? Why, to Mike's point, you never kept T.J. Watt honest at any point. You never kept anybody up. Dude, you can talk about it. And it wasn't just T.J. Watt. Alex Highsmith didn't have a terrible game either. He was putting pressure, and Jake Matthews, for the most part, did a good job. You got the one holding call on Jake. But to me, that's kind of one where I don't know what he's supposed to do, because Highsmith got underneath his pads where Jake's hands are to block him. I mean, that's his face mask. Cam Hayward, I don't know if he was blocked at all yesterday. So, and Joey Porter did a good job of neutralizing, for the most part, Drake London. Two catches. I heard people complain, well, we didn't use, Bijan Robinson wasn't good enough yesterday. Well, the guy had over 100 and something yards yesterday, all purpose. The interception, I don't know why Kirk threw it, because he tries to step up.
Which interception?
The final interception. He steps up, and that's one where...
Don't you just take the sack there? Plastic. You
have to. You have to eat the ball. He forced plays. I thought it was a perfect combination of what they were able to get after you with without you making enough adjustments, and then the quarterback on the top of that forcing plays.
Yeah. I think that Nate Tice, too, our buddy Nate Tice, Mike's son, who works for Pro Football Focus and Yahoo and a couple of other places, he did a good job kind of breaking this down, and he was like, this looked like a Peyton Manning the year he comes back from the neck injury game plan. You know what I mean? Like you're not going to do much with him other than shotgun, and he's going to be the kind of guy that could diagnose pre-snap and get the ball out. And
do
that's
you think
just
he's healthy?
From everything I've seen from him, yes. I mean, there's been nothing, Rob, that we've seen from Kirk Cousins.
You saw him in practice running
around
a little bit,
and he looked
out
fine. The problem is that the game plan, there's only one of two answers here, and that's that Zach Robinson either made this game plan based on Kirk Cousins not being healthy, or, and the much worse scenario is, Zach Robinson's not very good at his job. And I have to believe the first one, right? I mean, I have to believe the first one. I can't think that Zach Robinson would come out and be that freaking predictable about every single thing we were trying to do.
Would there be any truth that, I'm just asking you, you've been in those rooms, that was a game plan where they wanted to protect and ease him in, and they didn't want him to do too much early, especially with guys like T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith on the edges?
Well, you can talk yourself in circles on that.
Exactly.
Because I would say you'd like to protect him from T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith and do everything you can. I mean, just go look at what – just take Justin Fields' legs out of it, right? Go look at what they did in the backfield to Matthew Judon. Matthew Judon wasn't in the backfield at all last night. And Matthew Judon, at times, was being blocked by a tight end. And it wasn't because the tight end was blocking him sleep. It was simply because the tight end – it was because Matthew Judon didn't know where the ball was going, right? It's like, I don't know, if you're running wide zone this way, bootleg, screen, quick pass, tunnel, it's like he's coming off trying to diagnose. T.J. Watt, you watch as the game goes on, and he is essentially in the second half going, prove to me that you're going to do something else. Because until – It started to be cute when you line up Kyle Pitts outside of him, and he's looking at Kyle Pitts going, don't touch me. You know what I mean? Like, I dare you to touch me. Because T.J. Watt down the stretch goes, that's real cute, man. Y'all want to chip with Kyle Pitts. I ain't worried about Kyle Pitts, and I'm still going to destroy Caleb McGarry in the second half.
Oh, boy. So this looks like just an overall disaster of game planning and coaching.
Well,
just on one side. Hold on. Just on one side of the ball.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to, and I know you're not saying that, but I'm not going to sit here and listen.
I'm just saying offensively.
I understand that, but I don't want anyone to act like they didn't dominate on the defensive side of the ball. That was as good of a defensive, showing as you're going to get. They had multiple sacks. Grady Jarrett looked phenomenal.
He gets a sack, and he was just fighting like a dog. He looked good. He looked like he felt good.
At one point, I'm not sure how they couldn't. You don't throw it. There's not a holding call thrown on what they were doing. At one time, Grady Jarrett's jersey was hanging off of him, ripped from his right underneath his arm. Because of the grabbing and the pulling and the tugging that
was
going on.
That's the one replay I saw where he almost fought through that double.
Yeah.
He kind of did, but he got to Justin Fields just like a tick too late.
I think, too, and if you're going to subscribe, prescribe to the notion that you know, this is a Kirk Cousins health thing, then I think the good news is that, Rob, there is a lot that can still be done.
Yeah.
Right? Kirk Cousins can get healthy. If you have to go with the latter and say that, you know, this is a straight up Zach Robinson thing and that he was not doing this because of Kirk Cousins' health, I think that's much more terrifying. That's much more terrifying down the road.
Is it overplayed and lazy analysis to overemphasize the fact we didn't even see him or the first or second stringers in the preseason?
I think it's hindsight. I mean, I think it is what it is. I think 10 of the 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL did not play in the preseason. A lot of them looked fine, right? Lamar Jackson looked fine. He missed a couple days of training camp because he was sick.
But he's not with a new team coming off an injury.
I agree. And like I said, I mean, there's a lot. I think a little bit of it's hindsight. But I don't think there is a perfect recipe, right? I don't think that this is like, well, this is how I do it. When you look at today's NFL and you look at the situation around the Atlanta Falcons, health will be a key concern throughout the year for the quarterback. So not trotting him out in the preseason. You could go either way. Now, had he come out and thrown for 4 touchdowns, you'd say, they didn't need that, you know, but that's not the case, and that's not what we're looking at.
Yeah, I'm just tired of talking about preseason and when they play and when they don't play. No one's going to ever be happy either way.
Right.
If he went out there and played and he took a shot to the face and he missed 2 weeks of practice because of concussion, he'd have someone complaining why was he out there. Preseason's become the ultimate Monday morning quarterback debate.
All right, we're going to come back and we're going to man up, be held accountable in front of our peers and the listening audience. Coming up on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Time to take a look back.
This is Falcons Monday.
Everybody got to lock in right now.
Falcons Monday is presented by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons.
Our Falcons play here.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
Hey,
welcome back to the Morning Shift.
I got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, boy.
You told me at 3:30 on Saturday there would be no punches landed in the Cy-Hawk Trophy game.
I know, right?
And there were quite a few. I thought that Iowa had landed a knockout punch in the first half.
Right.
And holy smokes.
I don't know what it is. I watch that game every year for some reason. I got a really good buddy named Chuck, who I hang out with over there in the hood, and he went to Iowa State, and he remembers David Archer very well, this, that, and the other. So he's made it a little interesting, more interesting than it normally is, and good for Iowa State.
It's a very physical game.
It always is.
It's so much. I think that's part of the allure for you and I, especially. Is
such an old-school game, and, you know, Kirk Ferentz knows nothing about offense, clearly. He's demonstrated that over the past several years.
Well, Iowa State, the fact that they were able to come back, I thought the throw in the final drive, I'm not a huge fan of. It's Anthony Beck's son, the former tight end in NFL. Rocco Beck is the quarterback for Iowa State. I'm not a huge fan of him as a I don't dislike the kid, but there's times where I feel like he's very inaccurate. The ball, he made a rope of a throw on that final drive that set up that game-winning field goal. And I'm a Matt Campbell fan, so that was a good game. How about Notre Dame?
I was about to say, Northern Illinois' coach after that game, and I almost started crying. That was just such an emotional win for that program.
Wes had a stat for me, Rob, and I think this was, we're talking off the air, I think that's only like the 9th or 10th win for that coach at Northern Illinois, but 4 of them have come against Power 4 schools.
He used to be the Ravens running backs coach, I think.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
That's a crazy stat. But a good friend, that was, I enjoyed watching that. That was pretty funny to see that, actually.
Yeah. I was in town in Tuscaloosa Saturday night, and people are going to look at the final of that game and not understand how ridiculous that was.
South Florida gave you all everything you could handle.
Let me tell you something. If Falcons fans want to feel bad about Caleb McGarry against TJ Watt, you should have watched Bama and Wilkin Formby, their right tackle, play South Florida's defensive line, because you want to talk about. I'm not kidding you right now. I think he had. It was maybe 6 holding calls,
wow.
But it was like 150 yards of holding calls. It was like a 70-yard middle road touchdown, holding on the right tackle. A 40-yard pass, holding on the right tackle. And I was like, I was sitting next to my buddy that used to play right tackle with me, and I used to play right tackle, Bama, you know, for a season. And I was looking at him going, dude, I have been there, and that guy wants to dig a hole and jump in it and have his buddies fill the dirt in on top of him. Like, he is ready to exit the stadium. It was Nick Saban field night commemorating the stadium. And, like, it was like 14-13 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And then they put a new right tackle in, Elijah Pritchett, who was injured during the week, and he's the backup. And they scored three straight touchdowns, and the game was over.
Who's Alabama got next week?
Wisconsin. Wisconsin
at noon. Wisconsin.
At Wisconsin.
There, yeah.
And then they have Georgia.
Georgia.
So they need to get their mind right.
Well,
they need to get their mind right.
The DJ Lagway era is on in Florida. I don't care if they did play Samford. 456 yards passing. look, there's something different. You can tell, and there's something different when guys throw the ball, and the touch this dude has on the deep ball, he just plays
it.
Was it
456?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Come on, Napier. Well, like, it's like the Simpsons episode where he's like, stop, he's dead already.
Yeah, but they only scored 38 points. I mean.
Oh, Christ.
Well, you got to remember, Samford had just
took the guy out. You know what? Don't even start me. Like, Nick Saban never ran up to score on anybody. Bull.
He was like one of the worst.
You know what?
He was one of the worst covers in American coaching history.
He needs to man up, Dylan.
Decisions made on Friday.
Guaranteed.
Aren't always the best decisions.
What did he say?
It's time for Mike and Bo to man up and own their picks. Good, bad, or ugly.
I was way wrong.
This is Man Up on the Morning Shift.
Man up.
Be a man.
You need some man up.
Give me a man up.
Man up.
Man up.
Man up.
Man up.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Yeah, mistakes were made.
You're going to man up, too.
I got to man up.
Yeah, I don't care what that thing said. You're going to man up, too.
But we're starting off with the good, right? Then going to the bad, or you want to go bad and good?
Let's just start off on a good note.
Well, Mike, what was good with you?
Well, the good news is that the game that ended up being the more lopsided of the week in the college football game of the week that we picked was Texas and Michigan. And that game ended up being robbed 31-12. And here's what I had to say about it. I absolutely love Texas minus the points. I know Michigan still has an elite defense. I saw this play out last year when Texas came in to Alabama and absolutely wiped the floor with guys like Xavier Worthy. Not the same receiver core, but I still think Sarkisian gets it done up in Michigan this weekend.
Woo!
I was pretty spot on, guys.
Pretty spot on.
Okay, now that the segment's over, that's how I'm done.
No accountability for you, huh? What did Coach Saban teach you about being accountable?
You got to blame yourself. Blame yourself.
I was so sure in myself with the Cleveland-Dallas game, picking Dallas, that I started Dallas's defense on our fantasy team, Mike. And guess what? Squibb was right again. Mm. Deshaun Watson is back and healthy, but he's no Joe Flacco running this Browns offense. I don't know how Dallas is an underdog. I don't care where they're playing. 2.5 points, I'm taking the Cowboys and the 2.5 points. They turn the dog pound around. They roll in there. I think they win by at least 5 to 7 points easily.
Hell yeah! Wow!
Easily!
Hey, what a night! Did I get one of those? Come on, man!
That's right. Oh,
you get the fanfare and the sound effects.
That's right.
Yeah, but you're about to be held accountable in a second, young
fella. You know who the star of the show is,
don't you? We all are. Hey, I had a virtuous moment, too. Texas 38.
Oh.
Michigan 21. You said elite defense. I don't think it's going to be elite on Saturday, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I guess that counts.
Tepid praise.
Yes!
I'll take it.
Yeah,
I'll take
that.
It. Didn't Texas score 38?
31.
31.
31 okay. To 12.
Yeah, you had
the ballpark.
You had the 2 and the 1 for Michigan score reverse.
You know, just
a little teaser either way. You know, a little touchdown teaser.
Now it gets real, gentlemen.
Yep.
Now we're going to have to look at the film after a disastrous performance yesterday. We're going to look at the film. We're going to hold everybody accountable. Mike, the bad.
Yeah, the bad for me, and I do want to mention, I had the Duke Northwestern under Friday night. It was 37. They went to overtime 13-13. So I had a bad beat Friday night, but the really ugly one for me, the Panthers and Saints game, I was like, you know what? I don't like either one of these offenses. The game ends 47-10. Here's what I had to say about 42 being the under. The Carolina Panthers against the New Orleans Saints under 42. Dude, I get it, man. Both these teams are healthy, but I'm going to have to see it to believe it. I think both of these are great defenses at this point. You look at Carolina's defense, Ajiro Evero is back, you know, in terms of their defense. Under 42 for me, I think Carolina New Orleans looks something like 17-14 this weekend. I'm sticking with that.
Oh, psych! That's the wrong number!
I can't believe you
that
thought
that was awful.
I can't believe you thought that Gaffler. Bryce Young would score 14 points. I know.
I mean, holy
smokes.
Dude, that Panthers defense is loaded. No, we're not loaded.
That was awful. All of you are going to learn that I have trust issues, and I think it starts with the teams that I trust in sports. I'm talking to you, Georgia Tech. And there's only one team I trust in college football right now, and it's Georgia Tech. I took Georgia Tech to cover as well. I took Tech -3 because there's just something about them with the momentum that they have. Them being only a 3-point favorite to me, this ain't the Syracuse team. It ain't the same coaching staff. It ain't the same team that did that against Clemson.
What did he say?
You lose. You get nothing.
My heart was trampled on this weekend. Everything I know and trust in football was just abused.
Well, guess what, Squid? I also went along with you, walking side by side with you on that fool's errand touting Georgia Tech. For my pick, I'm going to go Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Carry Dome. Syracuse can just be so feisty at home regardless of their record. It seems like they gave Clemson fits up there when Clemson was at the height of their powers. Georgia Tech moves to 3-0.
Woo!
Your final score, Georgia Tech 16, Syracuse 12.
How about new?
But I qualify. They can be feisty at home. Did you see Syracuse's quarterback yelling on the sidelines? Dude, they're blanking sorry. They are sorry.
Jeez, man. That was hilarious.
Ghastly.
No, man, and look, there's always going to be good and bad. Like I said, that was rough. That was rough. That's why it's called a man up, Mike.
I love how I'm like, the only team I trust in college football.
I'm like, they're going to have to prove it. You're going to have to prove it that you can beat the Panthers defense.
I love it. My first man up Monday. It's hilarious. It's good to be held accountable, and it's also good to have the good and the bad.
You know, this is therapy, guys. Let's use this as therapy. We are in therapy right now for our Falcons.
Well, we're going to come back and get into that a little bit more. And the specter of starting off 0-3 now seems alarmingly real. We'll get into that coming up on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 again.
For my entertainers.
Taking a look back at the Falcons game with Falcons Monday.
Falcons Monday is presented by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. Our Falcons play here on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Morning Shift, Trouble in for Tiffany. So, gentlemen, I woke up yesterday really early like I normally do. Just a beautiful, there's a hint of fall in the air, beautiful morning. The coffee tasted good, made a good breakfast, you know, with some eggs. Cut my finger open, though. Look at this. Boy, those ceramic knives don't play, man. Right there at the edge of the fingernail.
Are you cooking?
Yeah, it's cooking. Nice little crescent-shaped cut, too, right there. That felt really good.
Yikes.
But I was feeling so good about the Falcons, so excited about kickoff, and then, well, the actual result ended up happening.
Yeah, and then they actually kicked off.
They actually kicked off. 404-726-0929. The therapy lines are open. Free therapy. This will be worth 10 grand in therapy once you get to enjoy some of our morsels of wisdom to talk you off the ledge.
Shout out to BetterHelp.com. There you go.
We got nice. First of all, let's get to Raheem Morris. Raheem, Kirk Cousins, he's not going to bounce back from this. It's done, isn't it?
For Kirk, he's always has to play. We know he has to play better. There's no doubt about that. And I look forward to him doing that. He's played in the league for a long time. And I look forward to him bouncing back from a rough game and a rough outing. I'm not overly concerned with that.
Not overly concerned. Well, okay. But, man, what I saw yesterday was just so disappointing.
Well, look.
Out of him.
Yeah, it was. And the main thing for me was, we can talk all the other things you want, but the decisions he made. Because that's why he's here. But he's here because you had a quarterback last year who had everything but the processing and making the good decisions. And sometimes you live to fight another day. And there's a couple of throws yesterday that he should have tucked the ball, taken the sack, or thrown it away, and instead he put it in harm's way, and that's unacceptable. There was also, and I honestly think, and this, you know, Arch was trying to talk about it, he in the snap that was botched, he stops the man in motion, then he brings him again, then he tries to stop him again.
I thought he just stopped him, period. I just thought I just
was,
hold up.
But he'd already started him.
I think he realized after he lifted his leg that he was like, this isn't going to go well, and then tried to stop him because he was like, oh, I messed up. I lifted my leg.
But it's too late.
I know. That's what I'm saying. But yeah. Like, I think it was like a – I think he had so much going on in his mind that he was like, snap, motion, snap, stop. Like, and then it was like, oh, God, this is going to be bad. And the same thing happened later on where he tried to move Kyle Pitts over to help Caleb McGarry, and Kyle Pitts never gets up on the line of scrimmage, and it's an illegal formation. It's just like, this is a debacle.
It looked like a disaster.
A lot of things going on in his head, and not a lot of movement in his feet.
Well, let's David Archer caught up with Kirk Cousins, and let's get inside his head.
This is the Falcons Quarterback Report.
Brought to you by Jim Ellis Key of Kennesaw, where you can always expect the best.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Not the result certainly you wanted, Kirk, and I know that we as quarterbacks, you try to value the football. I know you're disappointed in some of that.
Yeah, I think three turnovers. It's hard to win with three turnovers. You shouldn't win when you have three turnovers, and it's a shame because our defense, I thought, did a really good job, you know, and we didn't play enough complementary football to take advantage of the way our defense played.
Tell me about the foothold that looked like you started to get there, even the opening drive, where you guys really mixing things up. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was a strong first drive. Thought we ran the football well most of the day. Had a good timely third down conversion there on the first drive. You know, it's as old as time, but when you beat yourself, you know, that's when you get beat. So when we weren't beating ourselves, we moved the football. But too many times we beat ourselves and killed drives.
Well, there was certainly a lot of pressure, and you knew that they were going to come with pressure. That's who they are. That complimentary back end, front end stuff seemed to cause some problems for you guys today.
Yeah, again, you know, we moved the football well, but we had the fumble, if you will, on the shotgun snap, and then had the first interception, and then second interception. So it just felt like, you know, we had a tough, untimely penalty a couple times that we felt like we were moving, and then suddenly we got called back, and now instead of first and 10, we're, you know, third and long or second and long. So a lot of things that made life a lot harder for us.
Conversation will obviously ebb to, okay, didn't play in the preseason. The first unit didn't play, not just Kurt, but the first unit didn't play. A little bit of rustiness. I didn't see that. How did you feel about that?
I mean, there's no excuses, and we got off on that first drive well. So, you know, and we've talked about this, that it's a calculated deal. You know, we need to have our guys healthy. So that was the focus, and you know, now we've got to quickly turn it around and you know, make sure that it's just truly its own entity, the one game, and you flush that and you move forward and try to get the next one.
Okay, man. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Arch.
Clearly, he's going to be better Monday night in Philadelphia. Clearly, well, he can go 25 of 29 for 272 and two touchdowns, right?
This is what we talked about off the top of the show, Robert. It's one of two things. And I think Falcons fans are waking up blaming three different names today. I think you're looking at Caleb McGarry and you're going, dude, you didn't play well. I think you're looking at Kirk Cousins and going, dude, you're making a lot of money and you're turning the ball over. And I think that finally you're looking at Zach Robinson going, that was the most predictable, most vanilla, most unbelievable game plan I've ever seen.
What was that number you gave earlier?
I'll give it back again about the shotguns and the pistol formations, but to kind of
96%, I think.
To kind of sum that up, I mean, it is what it is, and I think that to your point, it can be better down the road. The question is, you have to ask yourself, did Zach Robinson make the game plan that vanilla because Kirk Cousins couldn't move, or is this what Zach Robinson is more than he's not? And I think that's more concerning down the stretch. If you are a believer in the Falcons and want things to change, if that's just simply what Zach Robinson's game plan was and Kirk Cousins is fully healthy, then that's the cause for concern.
Would you believe that it was a combination of they were trying to protect and in some ways in their own head, that let's protect him, let's not put him in harm's way in his first time back out there, let's let him get some confidence. But it just at some point, you got to turn him loose.
Well, that can be it in the passing game for sure. But the no play actions, I don't understand. You can run play action out of pistol. And the numbers are this, and Field Yates is, or he tweets this from ESPN Stats and Info. Falcons were in pistol or shotgun on 96% of the snaps. Of the 22 out of shotgun, the Falcons had zero designed runs. Of the 26 out of pistol, the Falcons ran the ball 81% of the plays. So, again, I'm not putting this all on Zach Robinson, but I have so many questions about what the game plan was. And when you got into the whole T.J. Watt is killing us, Kyle Pitts touching T.J. Watt with two hands was clearly not working. And you know what I mean? Like, there's no design draw. There's no design bootleg. There's no design. There's literally not one play at not one play action pass. And this is a guy, Kirk Cousins, who is, like, famous for his success on play action.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Well, Raheem Morris said, you know, hey, we can learn.
All these things are the same. They're all learning episodes. They're all learning opportunities. Whether you win, whether you lose, they're all the same for us coaches, right? You got to learn from wins. You got to learn from losses. And we will certainly learn from this loss.
The disappointing thing for me is that we're talking about Kirk Cousins, Zach Robinson, and T.J. Watt, Caleb McGarry, instead of, you know, how phenomenal you played on defense. The fact that you didn't allow a touchdown yesterday. You know, Justin Fields did everything they needed him to do because he didn't do anything extraordinary or play outside of his means. He didn't do any risk-taking because he didn't have to, and that's what you needed him to do. That was his job yesterday, especially with the fact that there were six field goals and five of them were 40 or longer.
Six field goals.
40 or longer, five of them.
That's crazy.
Let's go to Alex up in Canton. Good morning, Alex. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Good morning, fellas. How are y'all?
What's up, buddy? Good, man.
Hey, I'm going to keep it short here. I personally believe that if Kirk can't get it together, I think there's going to be pitchforks and torches outside the stadium within about 3 weeks.
Oh, no, Frankenstein.
I think everyone's ready to see that rookie if he can't get it together for the first couple weeks. And if it's like an 0-3 start, I really don't know what this franchise is going to do, y'all. Y'all take it easy.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Penix was dominant against Michigan just 9 months ago. So. Just saying.
Listen, yeah. If there's an 0-3 start, just buckle up for that. And that's not going to make or break the season, unfortunately, but buckle up.
I think Alex is not speaking untruthfully, but I just think that that is where you have to separate your fandom from the reality of the situation. And because I think what he's speaking is how a lot of people probably feel in their car. But the reality of the situation is it would have to be 0-6, 0-7. Because I don't think you invest that money to put a guy on the bench.
Yeah, do it.
No. And not only that, there's just no guarantee that Michael Penix is ready. I mean, it's one thing to go against the second team, Dolphins pass rush in week one of the preseason. But I'm with him, and I'm with Alex in this, that Kirk Cousins has simply got to play better. We can look at Caleb McGarry and Zach Robinson. That doesn't take away the bad decisions that Kirk made. You want to put him in a better situation. You want to put everybody in a better situation if you're Zach Robinson. And if you're Kirk, you have to protect some of the play calls. But that just simply doesn't take away the bad decisions of just throwing a ball up for grabs down the field. It just doesn't help.
All right, coming up, good day for some former Georgia Bulldogs, by the way. Unfortunately, right here in Atlanta and also out in San Diego. That's coming up next in the Huddle, Sports Radio 99 again.
Good morning.
Yeah!
Back to more of the Morning Shift
with Tiffany, Mike, and Bo.
The Morning Shift is brought to you by Greater Atlanta Erie McDonald's. Download the app for great deals
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. That's Zero Res. Before we get in the huddle, lots of interesting occurrences yesterday in the NFL and the Tyreek Hill thing. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that one. Before we get to that, though, let's go out to Kansas City and Devin. Good morning, Devin. What's on your mind?
Man. I'm already mad that I had to move to Kansas City and I have to live around all these farmers. But I get excited. And I wait for the season to start, and I thought I was watching Dan Wheel of Fortune the way Caleb McGarry was getting spent around all day. Now, I get T.J. Watt is T.J. Watt, but I mean, damn. You know what I mean? And, Mike, I'm with you, because it really hurt me. And I'm not trying to do the whole Michael Penix thing in, but I refuse to believe that Zach Robinson is that vanilla of a play caller being under Sean McVay with that O-line that he saw work with play action last year, that he would call that vanilla of a game plan, just like you said. And if that's the offense that we're going to run because we're trying to protect Kurt, it's not that I want to see Penix in, but he'll get hurt doing that type of game plan being not there. He's not healthy enough. Should they or should they not at least think about putting Penix in if we can't run a full, complete game plan?
I think
it's
a phenomenal call because I completely agree with you. I am not of the, hey, you know, it's time to put Michael Penix in because of the decision-making. But if that's as limited as we can possibly be offensively, then something has to change. Right. Because let me tell you something right now. The two defensive lines coming in the next 2 weeks ain't going to be any freaking easier.
And their strengths are interior. Their strengths are interior, not that.
Drew Dolman didn't have a good day either.
No, and he seemed. That's what I do. That's what just. I don't want to get to the off season, but that's what I was so miffed by, is that Drew Dolman, I didn't think had a good season last year, but everyone told you that, man, they were all impressed with how the player he's turned into. I didn't think he had a good offseason. I thought it was a necessity that you kept him basically out of the other moves you did. You know, Lindstrom at times struggles with the bigger defensive tackles. He didn't have a bad game yesterday, per se, but he knew. So when you have Jordan Davis coming up next week, and Jalen Carter to that matter, that worries me.
Yeah.
You know, the Eagles' strengths no longer their edge rushers. It's that interior. Now, their edge rushers eat because of how impressive their interior is.
Let me tell you something. If you don't move the pocket next week, it might be Penix time before you want it to be.
Oof.
I mean, if you don't move the pocket at all the way you did yesterday, it ain't going to be good, man. I'm just telling you that.
All right, a lot of rookie quarterbacks made their NFL debut yesterday. A Bulldog gets his firmer. Gets his for our first NFL touchdown. Let's go in the huddle.
It's time to huddle up.
Bring it in close. Bring it in close.
The latest NFL news, rumors, reports, and happenings.
Within the huddle on the morning shift.
All right, gentlemen. Tariq Hill detained by police for the game against the Jaguars yesterday. The one officer that was, one of the officers involved, he's been put on administrative leave. Apparently it was a moving violation. And I heard that Tariq Hill got a little mouthy and the cops bowed up and put him on the ground. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's all I know. It's just weird, a Scotty Scheffler moment, as you say.
Yeah, I'm sitting there eating with Arch and Mike Conti, and I think Wes was with us too. And I go, "Hey, did you see this?" And it's like Tariq Hill, and I'm watching the video, and I don't even know what to think. I think it's Scheffler-esque. I don't think he was in the zone of where players are entering, like with Scotty, but I do think this is an overreach. It appears, because if it wasn't, why was he released?
I don't know. Let's hear from Tariq Hill. Here's his explanation.
Tariq, why do you believe the police put you in handcuffs?
I have no idea, for real. No idea, man. It's crazy. No idea. It wasn't disrespectful, you know, because my mom didn't raise me that way. Didn't cuss, didn't do none of that. So, like I said, I'm still trying to figure it out, man.
Let me give a massive amount of kudos to him in that moment, because he could have absolutely gone in.
He could have made himself a martyr.
He could have. And Calais, same thing, man. It's just when you look at, I expected a completely different reaction from what we know about Tariq Hill and the situations he's been in personally, and that's not what he did. So, I mean, a massive tip of the cap to Tyreek Hill in that moment of not completely throwing everything against the wall and going in.
Well, he spun it into a positive, did Tyreek Hill?
Everybody has bad apples in every situation, you know, so I want to be able to, you know, use this platform, you know, to figure out a way to, like, flip this and, you know, make it a positive on both ends, on my end and then also Miami-Dade, you know, so that way we can team together and, you know, do something positive for the community, because that's what it's all about, bro. Like, you guys are here to, like, protect us as individuals, and you know, I have a platform, and I want to be able to team up with you guys, so.
I agree with you, man. He could have turned himself into a martyr and started raising hell and turned it into a whole big thing, and he didn't.
I respect the way he handled it. I don't know that any one person has ever flipped the way I have thought of him.
Right.
In one clip more than it just did Tyreek Hill.
Okay, Tyreek, I'm with you, brother.
Unbelievable.
I've never been a big Tyreek Hill fan from other things that have come out, but I agree with you. I think he handled this well. I know that Calais Campbell was detained, air quote, detained as well. I tend to believe that Calais Campbell, because what I heard in an early report yesterday, that teammates saw this and went to the scene to help support. And I think that's probably why Calais Campbell was detained, but it's a weird situation. I don't want to go as far as call the police officers bad apples, because I just don't know. You don't know exactly why he was pulled over. And until you know it, you know, it's the thing with Scottie Scheffler, is we knew exactly why he was pulled over, right? From the get-go. But we don't this with this, but it was, I just don't understand the need to have Tyreek Hill on the ground and handcuffed on the asphalt.
Seemed a little extreme to me, too. All right, moving on.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Well, moving on from that, Caleb Williams makes his Bears debut, gets a win in his first start. He wasn't anything spectacular, though, 14 of 29, 93 yards, gentlemen. But Will Levis helped their cause by throwing two interceptions. So,
what was it? I think I saw the stat that Caleb Williams and Desmond Ridder are the first quarterbacks to start their season opener and then win the game by throwing less than 100 yards with 25-plus attempts. A weird game. Mike, didn't you tell me another team that didn't score a touchdown but won the game? An offensive touchdown?
Yeah, what else? There was one other team that had just an awkward game going on, and I can't remember which one it was, because I was watching it yesterday in the postgame show with Chris Goforth, and I was like, man, there are just a couple of teams that can absolutely vibe with what was going on. I mean, look at New England. And you look at what Cincinnati is. You want to talk about
that's the biggest shock of Week One to me.
I was like 16 to 10.
Hey,
I said in the postgame, I said Falcons fan, want anybody to vibe with? Look at what Will Levis did from the quarterback position yesterday. The awful decisions he made, and the fact that Zach Taylor, Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase with the hold in that you put one touchdown up, and you allowed Ramondre Stevenson to go 25 carries for a $120 on you yesterday. Like, it's unbelievable what some of these teams were putting forth. It's just crazy. Let me tell you something right now. You want to talk about a forest fire. Daniel Jones and the New York Giants.
Ooh.
After being on Hard Knocks Offseason Edition and hearing that GM talk about, you know, literally has Jaden Daniels in his office and says, you know, Brian Daboll goes, do you want to be the quarterback of the New York Giants? Now you're riding, now out in public and the season hits and you're riding with Daniel Jones. Ooh. And he plays as badly as he did. That ain't just a hot seat, buddy. That's a forest fire up there.
Ladd McConkey gets a touchdown in his Chargers debut, and Jim Harbaugh gets a victory in his Chargers debut. Nice little fancy little shimmy move by Ladd, showing how athletic he is, getting in the end zone.
You just know Ladd McConkey is going to be a successful NFL player.
Yeah.
I wanted to get him in our dynasty league, and we got snaked by somebody. But, I mean, I'm not going to say good for Jim Harbaugh, because he's just so ridiculous. In pregame, he puts on the receiver gloves and going around, but I'm glad.
Well, he's just weird. Let him be weird. He's just a weird dude.
Yeah, it just comes off unlikably weird. Like, he's an unlikable weird. Like, there's some weird that's quirky and you kind of like, you kind of get it, right? But him, yeah. Like, Mike McDaniels is kind of a likable weird.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh, an unlikable weird.
That's a nice comparison. Jaden Daniels in his debut, nothing spectacular. 17 of 24, 184 yards. But Baker Mayfield thriving under chaos. He was pressured all day. But he does what Baker does. He extends plays. And what does he do? He goes out and throws for 289 and four touchdowns. And the Buccaneers get a big win yesterday.
I thought he was one of the more surprising performances. We made so much in the offseason about Dave Canales going to Carolina. And like how much that would mean for Bryce Young. And you look at what Bryce Young did, and it was awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
And Baker didn't miss him.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield didn't miss it one bit. Baker Mayfield's like, plug me in, let's roll, and throws for almost 304 tuds. I mean, I don't know who looked scarier for Falcons fans yesterday between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints, man.
Oof.
Both of those offenses looked unbelievable yesterday, and you did not expect that to come out of either group, so it's kind of crazy.
Fascinating game tonight, and I guess it's right here on Sports Radio 929 The Game. Don't we carry the Monday night football game, I do believe?
We do.
It's going to be the Jets and Aaron Rodgers taking on the 49ers. So that's going to be fascinating to see what Aaron Rodgers is coming off an Achilles at the age of 40. And the 49ers being the 49ers. So got that to look forward to.
That's one of the better defenses in the NFL. They've been that for years now. I hope Brock Purdy eats tonight.
Yeah, we got Brock Purdy versus Garrett Wilson in the dynasty matchup tonight. It's like, dude.
I need Brock Purdy.
We're down by 15 right now. I need you to eat.
I need Brock Purdy to play like Cam Newton's in his ear, calling him a nobody.
Jared Goff's got to be feeling good because the Lions beat his former team, the Rams, in overtime. Good win for Detroit.
Honestly, man, the Rams last night, and I want to point this out because I don't think a lot of people realize this. You're just waking up looking at it. The Rams were, I think they had three offensive line injuries last night. They only had two starters left by the end of the game. So, actually, kudos to them for even making it a game, to be honest with you, against that defensive front.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, Smart Lasting Clean. We got Mike'd up coming up, Mike?
Talk a little bit about the old Barves up there at Truist Park. Big win yesterday in extra innings. Somehow pulled that one off, but we're going to get back into Mike'd up after that. I did a little bit of number crunching on the Caleb McGarry against TJ Watt. We'll talk about how many times he was helped, how many times he wasn't, and what that means moving forward. That's coming up next on Mike'd Up. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Good morning.
Yeah!
Back to more of the Morning Shift
with Tiffany, Mike, and Bo.
The Morning Shift is brought to you by Greater Atlanta Erie McDonald's. Download the app for great deals.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Jared Kelnick, deep right center field. Goodbye! Solo jack for Jared Kelnick. 1-0 Atlanta.
Well, the Braves would go on and get the victory yesterday. Hey, you know, all I got to say about the Braves is, I mean, I've been so immersed in football, I didn't pay much attention to the Braves this weekend. You got good pitching. Get in the tournament, maybe a Laureano can go off. Maybe one of those nondescript guys can go off. Get in the tournament, pitch like you've been pitching, anything can happen. That's all I have to say about the Braves.
Well, Chris Sale is a Cy Young. There's no – on September 9th, I don't know what he could do to lose it, knock on wood. But here's the real thing. You look at the wild card, you talk about getting in, and that's what I want to touch on for real quick on here. Four teams are separated by two games.
Yeah.
And the Padres, the Diamondbacks, and the Braves are 5-5, 4-6, and 5-5 in their last 10. Meanwhile, the Mets are red hot. They are 9 out of their last 10 games they've won. Their loss was yesterday. So here's the reality, because the Braves and the Mets are now tied. The reality is, do you think the Mets can stay as hot as they are? I personally don't.
No, not at that torrid of a clip.
But the Diamondbacks and the Padres were that hot for about a 3-week stretch, like the Mets have been for a 2-week stretch. The Braves were hot for about a 2-week stretch, and they have come, or 3 weeks, and they've come back. So I think that you're in good, as weird as this is going to sound, you're in good position. But to your point, you do need one guy in this lineup to get hot with the pitching you've got to get you there, and then you need someone else to get hot to extend it.
And that's where I'm kind of sitting right now, that when you look at this lineup, man, and I agree with you, get in the tournament. The problem is, and this goes back to the whole, there's a squadron of people out there to fire Brian Snitker right now. You got one starting hitter, really, that's hitting north of 250, and that's Marcell Ozuna. It's not on Snit. Not only that, what a hell of a job that we're even talking about this team in this capacity of getting into the tournament.
What have you lost? Remember I compared it to, you basically lost your starting quarterback, your best tackle, your best edge rusher, and your star receiver. That's what the Braves have lost.
I agree, man.
And Marcell Ozuna would be Kyle Pitts.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm having problems with Kyle Pitts today. Speaking of Kyle Pitts, let's talk about that, Mike, though.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me?
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mike'd Up.
On the Morning Shift.
Brought to you by the Lexus Golden Opportunity Sales Event.
Caleb McGarry. It was the name heard round Falcons world yesterday, along with Kirk Cousins, along with Zach Robinson, along with a number of other people offensively yesterday. So last night, turned on the old condensed version of the videotape. I wanted to go kind of just take a snippet of what Kalen McGarry was doing yesterday.
You did the forensics.
I did the forensics. It's a very loose version of forensics. I didn't go back and take plays out for, you know, penalties that negated the gained yardage and everything else. But here's what I saw yesterday. First of all, the first drive was Kalen McGarry's best drive against T.J. Watt. It just was. The reason I think, guys, is because T.J. Watt was not quite sure yet what the Falcons were going to try to do offensively. Oh, maybe they'll run a draw. I don't want to fire out of my stance. They might run a bootleg. And as the game wore on, like we've talked about all day, it was like he very much was like, okay, they're not going to do that. Okay, they're not going to throw the ball over my head. Okay, he's not going to play action pass. Okay, they're not going to bootleg. Okay, they're not going to run the screen. I'm just going to tee off on Kalen McGarry until they do otherwise. Now, on the first drive, I think there was, I want to say, five drop-back passes. I didn't keep the numbers on that one exactly. Five one-on-one matchups between McGarry and T.J. Watt. Kyle Pitts helped one time. It was a very weak chip on the outside of T.J. Watt, you kind of move
on. It was pathetic, actually, is what it right. was. That's all the reason.
That was on the first drive. On the first drive. All right, so here's the numbers I have. Yesterday for Kalen McGarry against T.J. Watt, I had 22 straight-up pass sets. Now, there was a couple of early swing passes. There were a couple of quick throws. But I had straight-up pass protection, Kalen McGarry against T.J. Watt. I had 22 just straight-up kick-set drop-back passes. I've got Kalen McGarry getting help on 12 of those. All right, 12 of the 22 that I counted yesterday, Kalen McGarry gets chips or double teams on 12 of the 22 that I counted.
Slightly over 50%.
Slightly over 50%. And like I said, I'm not negated. Some of these plays are negated because there's penalties that might bring them back or whatever it may be. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the actual matchup as if you were watching a one-on-one pass rush. All right? Six of those helps. That's half. That's half of the times he was being helped. Kyle Pitts. All right? I counted four of those still resulted in Kirk Cousins hits by T.J. Watt. So of the six times that Kyle Pitts helped, four of those still resulted in him getting hit. Five of those helps were Bijan Robinson. I think one or two of those actually resulted in Kirk Cousins getting hit still. And then you had a Charlie Warner leaking out into the flat. Charlie Warner actually caught a pass the time that he helped Kalen McGarry. All that being said, because I want to make sure I'm not being too rough. Zach Robinson tried to make changes in the second half, or as they got deeper into the game, on how to help Kalen McGarry. Two things went wrong. A, number one, you used the wrong dude to do it in Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts wanted absolutely none of the smoke that T.J. Watt was bringing off the edge. As a matter of fact, T.J. Watt stopped paying attention to Kyle Pitts. Even when he was being chipped, he was like, dude, I am not worried about your two hands being laid on my shoulder.
It's like a gnat.
At one point, it looked like Kyle Pitts actually gave him a shove into Kirk Cousins. It actually looked like he helped him out. The flip side of that is that if you are Zach Robinson, at some point you also have to notice that maybe Kyle Pitts is not that guy. Now, we can talk in circles about whether or not Kirk Cousins should have played in preseason. But maybe the real downfall of this entire ordeal is that you didn't get to see Kyle Pitts play in the preseason enough for Zach Robinson to know he's not that guy that's going to take a chunk out of T.J. Watt. Well, Bijan Robinson helped a ton. He was a little bit better at it. But Kyle Pitts and his two-hand touch of chipping on the way out did absolutely nothing. Even though Zach Robinson is going, I'll help you with a tight end and I'll chip on the way out. Turn it into a double team. Tell him not to leak out in the pass route. All right, turn it into a double team or put somebody more physical in there that actually wants to get their hands dirty and actually help Kalen McGarry. I'm not saying Kalen McGarry didn't stink. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying if you wanted your quarterback to have any time to throw the ball, that was the adjustment and the problem that I didn't see down the stretch run yesterday.
Well, two things can be right at the same time. Kalen McGarry is terrible, and Kyle Pitts is not helpful.
And Zach Robinson didn't ever adjust. And it stinks
to say. Well,
that'd
be three things right at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that we can talk ourselves in circle about it. And like we've said all show, there's going to be three names brought up. Kalen McGarry, Kirk Cousins, Zach Robinson. They all three were at fault for a lot of different things yesterday in bad decisions that were made, and they all three came together to make this an absolutely ugly Falcons loss that we're still reacting to. That's unfortunate. They did try to help they left Kalen McGarry on the island. No, they didn't. It was not an effective form of helping McGarry off the edge with Kyle Pitts.
All right, who deserves a wake-up call? 404-726-0929. Also, we're going to give away something for free. If it's free, it's me, right? Coming up a little later on, you get a chance to win Atlanta United versus Montreal. That game's coming up on Wednesday, October 2nd. In Mercedes-Benz, it's going to be a 7:30 game on Wednesday the 2nd. Tickets on sale now, by the way, at atlutd.com. We're going to give some United tickets away coming up within the next hour, so stay tuned for that. It's the Morning Shift. And again, more wake-up call time, 404-726-0929. It's the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Let's check out the teams.
It's a Monday, and time to take a look back with Falcons Monday.
Falcons Monday is presented by Ticketmaster, the official ticket marketplace of the Atlanta Falcons. Our Falcons play here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Woo! Bring them out, bring them out.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com and get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. About five or six more outings by Kirk Cousins like that, he'll be calling Mark Spain.
We can go down that route all day. Let me tell you something right now, and I was talking to some guys on the socials. There's at least three names that will be ahead of him on the way out of town before he's
right
financially, before he's
It's Nathan Peterman time. That's all we know.
Yeah. It feels like what we saw at time yesterday.
All right, let's go to Tinker Taylor, Soldier Spy up in Kennesaw. Good morning, Tink.
What up, Tink?
Good morning.
What's up?
Hey, I got two, and I'll be quick about it. First, with the Falcons. Nothing can simulate true game speed and game situations. Even if you only play a series of two during the preseason, it showed. And what is the point of being healthy if you're just going to suck? And my second one is to the new guy in our fantasy league, flipping lip all week. Let's just say I took that boy out to the woodshed. Y'all be good.
What's the point of being healthy if you're going to suck?
Nothing better than the new guy in the fantasy league getting his butt whooped, isn't there? Like, yeah.
Coming in all mouthy.
Yeah, mouthy just gets hubris. Smoked.
That's pretty funny. There's nothing like being very visibly and verbally upset about your team losing, but at least your fantasy team took it to the new guy.
All right, let's go up to Ackworth and Lake Allatoona and Paul. What's going on, Paul?
Morning, gentlemen.
What's Paul?
Up, hey, I'm originally from Pittsburgh. I've been down here about 15 years now. I do enjoy watching the Falcons. Yesterday was kind of torn game for me. But for the callers on Friday who kept saying that Kirk was going to throw for 400 yards against Pittsburgh's defense, kind of delusional there. Pittsburgh's got a pretty solid defense. The good news is that Atlanta's not going to see anybody near the caliber of T.J. Watt for the rest of the year, pretty much. The preseason thing, you can hound on it like Mike was saying. I'm glad you brought up the Kyle Pitts thing, Mike. He's soft. He's nowhere near the player he was in college. And that's all I got to say. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Two things. Don't underestimate how good Alex Highsmith is on the other side. That guy's had double-digit sacks in a season as well. I think he had 14 a couple years ago. I would also tell you that Kyle Pitts did not block much in college either.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say that he's not the same player.
Blocking. He's talking about blocking.
But he was never a good blocker in college. Just to clear the record, but he has not been the receiver the last 2 years that he was in college. I'll agree with that.
Well, and two, I do want to point this out. And just to be clear, Paul. We had one caller that said 400 yards for Kirk Cousins,
yeah.
And we all kind of gasped. And we're
No.
Because this is a top five unit, in my opinion, defensively. And you were that guy. You were that team last year. Covered it during the pregame yesterday. In terms of 10-play drives, I think this was the best team in the NFL. And then you went and added an all-pro caliber linebacker in Patrick Queen from Baltimore. So, yeah, I mean, you have some really good players. It's a really good defense. I don't know. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think they'll face anybody the caliber of T.J. Watt. You might face better defensive units as a whole. But, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. That is the good – that's the sigh of relief.
Well, I think you hit on your draft pick with Peyton Wilson, too. That dude.
Yeah, he was very good.
He was a beast in college, and he was very good yesterday.
But, I mean, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Joey Porter
All
Jr.,
pro.
Alex Highsmith, Patrick Queen, T.J. Watt, Cameron Hayward. Benton is a hell of a player. Ogunjobi is a very good player.
Just to be clear, that's not to excuse anything we saw offensively. And I know you're not trying to.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I'm actually backing up Paul's point.
Yeah, Paul.
He said they're good. I think he's wrong. I think they're a great defense. I think they're a top 10 defense easily in the NFL. And, in fact, last year they were that. I mean, they were the sixth best scoring defense in football last year. So
Russell Wilson starts next week. He didn't lose his gig yesterday.
No, well, if he's healthy.
Yeah,
let's put it this way. There are right tackles or and tight ends who can chip and block T.J. Watt effectively at times. You're not going to be able to score six field goals every week and beat teams in the NFL. It happened, but I don't think it's a week in, week out thing.
All right, let's go to Mike. Mike is on the bluff. What bluff are you on? Don't jump.
I'm from the bluff. From the A.
All right, guys.
What's up, guys?
What's up, man?
Check it out, man. I want to become a member of Squid Nation, and I want to say friends don't let friends join the mafia.
My man.
Whoa.
Hey, don't you mess with him. Don't you mess with Mike from the bluff.
What in God's name are we doing here? Calm down.
Mike, proceed with your call, sir.
Yo, I went to the game, and Mike, just like you, I went back home and watched the film, and then I watched the Rams, and it's the same exact offense. People need to make sure we don't jump off the ledge too early. And it's true, Kirk Cousins should have played preseason. It's the timing. All the timing was off. But who's going to be our Cooper Kupp? Now, when it comes to Kyle Pitts, we got to learn how to lather him up and get him ready for the game. He's not a blocker. Squid, you're exactly right. He never did that in college. You got to get him in the game. The offense that I'm looking at, the Rams, they have no one like Kyle Pitts. We got to find a way to get him involved early to keep him engaged. I'm happy that the defense did what they did. I don't think we're going to face anyone that looks like the Steelers defense. Yeah, there's some big boys in Philly, but them big boys going to get tired. I love what I saw. The sky's not falling. I'm very optimistic. We held the field goals. Yeah, that's not going to happen all the time, but the defense looked good. We moved the ball up and down the field. We got to get a way to get Kyle Pitts involved. I'm out.
Yeah. All right, Mike, well, be careful what you wish for, the humiliating initiation ritual that you have to go through to be in part of Squid Nation.
Yeah. End
of
the call. I was a nobody before I joined the nation.
Y'all are so hateful, both of you. Both of you. This is where you want to be? This is where you would be when Jesus comes back, making fun of Squid Nation? I don't think so.
Oh, wow. Jesus is a member of the mafia.
that's our star player.
not a bust in the draft. All right, let's go to Meat in Atlanta. What up, Meat?
All right, what's up, Rob? Man, I want to give my man Rob some love, man.
Yes,
I want
sir.
To be the honorary founder of Rob's Reject.
Rob's Reject, yes, I'll take it.
Hey,
yes, sir.
Beef.
Yes, sir.
Beef, I got a question for you.
Awesome. What a great name.
Beef, I got a question for you. How did you get your nickname?
I don't know. It's something that came from my group. It comes from my grandmother that just always called me since a kid. But for my the wake-up call is for my Falcon fans. Don't be discouraged or dismayed. The defense played tremendous. They gave up six field goals. That's not going to happen every – people are not going to beat you with six field goals every week. So do not be discouraged. We're still going to win 11 games. I'm out.
Fear not.
Dude.
The founding member of
right
Rob's
now.
Rejects has spoken.
I love
all
it.
About
that's
this
a,
right
that
now.
Is that is great. I'm going to have to make the Squidbilly t-shirt collection is going to have a new shirt. It's going to be at Rob's Rejects.
I'll be honest, I did not foresee that we would have any callers that would have a more positive outlook than what I'm having right now.
Right.
But yeah, that's exactly the good vibes I'm getting. So shout out to them.
They must be Twitterless, Mike.
Well, I think that's no doubt about that. No doubt about that. They got off there a long time ago.
All right, let's go down to College Park, where most of my family is buried. College Park Cemetery, by the way. And James, good morning, James.
Thanks for that.
I don't know.
Hey, good morning. I just want to say two things. One, is there a reason why Kirk wasn't trying to, come out, like the single back right behind? He just stayed in, almost shotgun pistol all game. And two, what's going on with the red zone scoring, man? Hashtag Big Squid Billy Nation.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh,
what's right.
going on?
Well, luckily, I think you're one of two, right, Mike? That Pitts touchdown was.
Yeah, that was right there at the end.
You
set up with a field goal on the first drive. I don't know that you got in the red zone in the second half, did you?
No, you did not.
So,
do the reads.
And James, I think, listen, that's a conversation we've been trying to kind of cross the threshold of all day, is the reason. Because there's two options here, and I'll kind of rehash this for anybody that's just now tuning in. There's two options here. A, number one, Kirk is still healthy, and Zach Robinson's game plan was bad, or Zach Robinson's game plan was trying to take care of Kirk Cousins' legs and did not want to use him at all in the bootleg, the play action, any of the other stuff where he had to actually be mobile.
Where was Tyler Allgeier yesterday?
Only just ripping off maximum gains on the three that he had.
Yeah.
Just frustrating.
They had some multiple back sets throughout the game. I want to say around 7 to 10, but he only got 3 carries. Here's the thing for me about the bootleg talk. I understand that being it going in, saying, look, I don't want to put Kirk out there in a tough situation, first game back with T.J. Watt out there. But after every time you saw how after that first drive, T.J. Watt was just viciously crashing that run game, at what point do you go, let's do a little play action here, boot, and get it out to maybe a Kyle Pitts out there and just let him eat? That's just the baffling part of it.
Correct. And we talked earlier when we did the breakdown, ESPN Stats and Info had the breakdown, shotgun, pistol, whatever it may be. The fact that you were, 83% run at a pistol and did not boot at a pistol. You can boot out of pistol. Why won't you under center? You can boot out of pistol. You can. They chose not to.
Give him a different look.
I don't understand. But I think a lot of the conversation, Rob, is, hey, you don't put him under because you don't want him to have to, fake the handoff and take the drops. You put him under the center. Because Kirk's Achilles. You can still boot out of pistol. It still happens. People do it all the time. Yet we chose not to at all, period, yesterday.
You can play action and a shotgun. I saw Tim Tebow do it all the time. He would play action himself.
Well, it's hard. I'll say this. It's hard to run wide. It's hard to run wide zone out of shotgun in the NFL. That's one of the big things. But you can. The reason you get into pistol is to run wide zone. That's exactly what you saw yesterday.
Hey, what are you doing on Wednesday, October 2nd at 7:30? Well, if you're fifth caller, 404-726-0929, you'll be going to see Atlanta United take on Montreal Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Fifth caller, the game is October 2nd at Mercedes-Benz, 7:30 p.m. Coming up next, I'm going to talk to my man, one of my favorite Falcons of all time. That would be number 16, David Archer. Coming up next.
Yes, it is a lovely morning, isn't it?
Now, more of The Morning Shift. The Morning Shift is brought to you by Greater Atlanta Erie McDonald's. Download the app for great deals.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back to The Morning Shift. Triple in for Tiffany. 18-10 the final, of course. Yesterday, Falcons getting ready to head up to Philadelphia. Take on the Eagles and that troglodyte fan base there. Let's go out to David Archer. Arch, good morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Man, make me feel a little bit better about yesterday. I was so disappointed. I saw some good things as well, but ease the concerns of this fan base, can you?
Wow, it's going to be a stretch. I know you guys have been working on that all morning. I would say you're better your second week than you are your first week. There's not a lot of things to hang your head on. I mean, really. You want me to talk, Bo, or do you want to gab some more? Go ahead, Bo. You go ahead and talk.
Hey, you know what? Don't get an attitude of me because you're upset about yesterday. That's what I got when I got home last night.
Yeah, it was a tough outing. I thought that they came out of the blocks pretty good. I thought that the big question was, and I know Mike and we talked about it in the pregame show. You don't really know what you got because they didn't play in the preseason. And I know there was a lot of emphasis put on what they did in practice. But, let's face it, practice is what we call thud tempo, where you come off, you collision, and then you ease off. And so these were situations where you're going to have to block a guy for 4 seconds, or you're going to have to come off the ball and sustain something for a longer period of time. You're going to have to get yourself up off the ground and do it again over and over again. And that's the part that's different in a game that's in practice. And I thought that there were some really good things early on. I thought the opening drive Atlanta put together, there was a lot of diversity in the drive. I thought there was a lot of variation from formations and this and that. But as you moved on, there wasn't a lot of change from the opening drive to the end of the game as far as keeping Pittsburgh off balance. But I thought it was a tale of two halves. Atlanta really was solid in the first half, and in the second half, they were non-existent on offense. I think if you count the penalties, they ran 21 plays for 26 yards. And I know Mike, I heard Mike on the postgame show talking about some of the stats and statistics that came out about shotgun snaps and pistol snaps and those kind of things. Those things, you're not going to be able to get a track on those probably during a game. Now, Philly has a track on them right now, and so there's going to have to be a huge changeup for Zach to self-scout and make sure that you're not locked into with what you're going to be doing, so Philly can just lock into everything you're doing.
Well, too, and Arch, that's what I want to dive into, and I've made the kind of argument all day that there's a lot of concern about Caleb McGarry and Kirk Cousins, but there's more concern for me about Zach Robinson, and I don't know that he was protecting Kirk Cousins' Achilles or what it is, but when you look at what Kirk Cousins has been in his career, the fact that there was not one play-action pass run yesterday, to me, is the most concerning stat we have. No bootlegs, no nothing like that, just literally sitting back in the pocket and allowing T.J. Watt to kind of tee off. What did you make of that? What did you make of the game plan yesterday, and what do you think can change moving forward?
Yeah, I thought that some of it had to do with, you know, kind of based on what they thought they were going to get from on-tape standpoint, that they kind of geared this game plan to take an advantage of what they saw from the Steelers. Now, certainly neutralizing the two edge guys were paramount. You and I talked about that in the pregame, about, you know, what are you going to do with Highsmith and T.J. Watt to make sure they don't control the football game. I thought that and I commented during the game, that Watt was closing off of the backside. He was completely disregarding anything coming back at him when he was coming off the backside, meaning he was just closing at a really flat angle. He made a number of plays in the run game from just closing down the line of scrimmage and really only getting upfield maybe one or two steps and then down the line. And so the only way you counteract that is to bootleg out of it or have something coming back the other direction. We didn't do any of that, and so that was a little disconcerting there. Obviously, the continuance of letting McGarry on an open end. Now, we tried to get to it late and tried to chip block a little bit late. I know you talked about that a little bit, Mike, during the week. Chip block him going releasing guys in that area. So we got to it late, but it was at that point. I think things were flustered. Kurt, for me. I thought that Kurt, the pressure, and that's where he's supposed to thrive. He's thrived for his entire career in the pressure situation. I think there was some rustiness to him. I don't think there's any question about it. I think as much as you'd like to say that you felt good about the practices and all those kind of things, I don't think there's an issue with the injury. I don't think he was protecting him on the bootleg to try to make sure he didn't tear his Achilles tendon. He was going to have to move violently in the pocket anyway to avoid people. I thought he did some of that. I thought that if you looked in the opening in the first half, and even in the drive where they threw the touchdown to Kyle, which was in the first half, his movement in the pocket was excellent. I thought he did a really good job. But that pocket began to shrink, and some of it had to do with that you weren't threatening those guys and you didn't reduce them physically like we talked about in the run game.
Former Falcons quarterback, current Falcons radio analyst Dave Archer joining the show. Look, Arch, we can talk about all the what wasn't on offense, but let's talk about what was with the defense. What stood out to you yesterday for the Falcons' defensive effort against the Steelers?
Well, I was a little – I thought that the rotations were pretty good. I thought that they tried to keep fresh bodies on the field. That was something they did. You know, they kept all those guys on the defensive line for a reason. They wanted to rotate guys. We knew that in the first game of the year, especially with them not playing in games and how the game shape scenario, if you will, I'm using the air quotes on game shape. I talked about the physicality of the game and how much you got to keep picking yourself up off the ground and get lined up and you got to play for 4 or 5 seconds of a play. That's not what you're doing in practice. So that was going to take its toll. Plus the adrenaline flowing, that was going to be an energy sapper. And so I thought they did a really good job of rotating guys and keeping guys fresh on the field. I was a little disappointed that in the second half, Pittsburgh was able to get some foothold in the run game. They were able to kind of run in the interior a little bit. Some of that, most of that was, I think a lot of it was against the second unit. But as far as the organization of the defense, I thought that they kept Philly or kept Pittsburgh at bay for the most part. They didn't let I know that the quarterback run game was a big concern. I thought that Fields did a few things, maybe extended a couple of drives with a couple of scraps, but he didn't break you down in the run game. He made two plays in the pass game. Both of them were to George Pickens. So I thought that the defense, you know, held the rope. I kept talking about it. They're holding on the rope. There were a number of times where you've talked about it, where they forced long field goals. So 5 of the 6 were long field goals. So as far as defense goes, they did about as much as they could, especially being on the field for 35 minutes. And I thought it began to take its toll. I don't know how you felt about it, Mike, but I felt like they got really – I thought they got fatigued late in the game, in the fourth quarter. I thought they were having a tough time. They were trying to rotate people a lot more. It was almost like hockey line shifts. All of a sudden, the line shifts for 30 seconds instead of a minute. It was you were trying to keep fresh bodies on the field. But you allowed them to stay in manageable third down situations. I think that's probably the most disturbing thing for me on them is they didn't give up a lot of big plays. It was just that they allowed them to kind of possess the football and stay on the field. And that's probably the biggest thing Jimmy Lake will probably make adjustments to.
Yeah, they had some of those week one lungs, we used to call them, Arch. You know what I mean? Those lungs haven't quite filled up the way they will down the stretch run when you get there. So, I guess my question, Arch, now is, and we can talk about the game plan and the play actions and the bootlegs and keeping them off balance. What do you do heading towards Monday night against the Philly defense that's pretty good in their own right in the front seven?
Yeah, I think that the thing that you get concerned about a little bit, and I heard you talk a little bit about McGarry. I was a little concerned about some interior pressure, Mike, in the game. We had talked about this in the offseason, you know, with how Drew was going to be able to stand up in there. Was that going to be an area they might address in the draft? Is that an area they might address in free agency? I thought he had some problems with some of those guys in the interior. Well, that doesn't get any easier. You know, Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter are going to be problems on the interior. And if you've got a guy that doesn't move around very much like Kirk doesn't, or certainly didn't in this game, interior pressure is going to be a nightmare. I think Kirk will be better. I think that the offensive line, I mean, you get a game under your belt having not played in the preseason. I think they'll be better as a group. I think they have a little bit more of an idea of what they have, as much as you'd like to have known that prior to going into the game. But you're right. Philly's not going to be any easy task. And you could argue that Philly is as good, if not better, than Pittsburgh is on defense. I think that probably Philly's strength is in the interior and in their secondary, and Pittsburgh was maybe on the edge and in their secondary. So there's not a lot of difference here. The problem is you might get stressed more by Philly's offense. Philly has a lot more weapons on offense with Saquon Barkley and the way he played the first week, and then a core of receivers. This was a nondescript core of receivers you played this weekend. You know, George Pickens was really the only guy. Freiermuth, the tight end, a solid player. But now you're going to get three legitimate big-time receivers with Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, and Jahan Dotson, and then you throw in the tight end with Barkley catching the ball in the backfield. This is going to be a real task, and this will be a real test for the defense for Atlanta. So Atlanta's offense is going to have to pick it up a great deal to take some of that pressure off. They're not going to be able to play 35 minutes in this game. This game will get out of hand.
Well, thanks for making me feel worse, Arch, but at least your Cyclones got a win this weekend. And a good buddy of mine actually went to Iowa State, so yep.
Well, they did some punching this weekend, and there was some punching there late. How about that?
Yes, sir. All right, Arch. Let's hope for a corrective emotional experience in Philadelphia next Monday night. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, sorry I didn't take you off the ledge there. But, hey, we got to take this seriously and get after it. I think they'll be better this week, but it's going to be a tall task.
I have pills on the ledge with me, so it's gotten even worse, but thank you. All right. What's coming up next in the life of Squid?
Well, I think Jason Garrett proved he's in Squid Nation, and we will get a little recap of what happened in the first week of the playoffs in NASCAR at Atlanta Motor Speedway. All next on the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and
the Odyssey app.
That's right.
More than just sports talk, this is The Morning Shift.
I'm in. Me too.
The Morning Shift is brought to you by Greater Atlanta Erie McDonald. Download the app for great deals.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back to The Morning Shift. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain. Go to markspain.com, get to packing, he'll sell that damn house for you. Braves and Reds tonight, a makeup game. Then they have to go to Washington to take on the Nationals. The Doyers come into town starting on September 13th. Gentlemen, Braves in a tie for the wild card with the Mets after that victory yesterday. So just getting the tournament, right?
Yeah, that four-game set against the Dodgers this weekend. And then that three-game set with the Mets at home in late September.
Starting
all
on
loom
the 24th.
Large.
Yep.
Yeah.
Looming large. Well, so does well, let's get to your thing, shall we?
Yeah, the life of Squid's always looming large because I'm the star.
It's time for a look back
into the mind of Squid Billy.
Hey, he might even talk sports.
This is the life of Squid on the Morning Shift.
Brought to you by the W Sauce and Status Truck and Trailer Repair. Driven by excellence, building successful partnerships.
Kind of like the way the voice lady says my name, Squid Billy. I like that.
That's weird.
All right, W Sauce, breakfast sauce. Breakfast sauce too, Bloody Mary mix, Key West style. Get up WSauce.com, find your bottle today. And my friends at Status Truck and Trailer Repair. Big truck, small truck, medium-sized truck. It
El Camino.
Doesn't matter. El Camino. It don't matter.
Conversion van. Doesn't matter.
I think that's the type of truck. can be, depending on where you're from. Anyways.
Ice cream truck. I know the Squid's got one of those ice cream trucks, so.
The creepy old beat-up yeah. white van.
Yeah, 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 the ones with the faded stickers on the
still
side.
Still in circulation.
Yeah.
Free puppies.
Those don't scream John Wayne Gacy. Anyways, get our my friends at Status Truck and Trailer Repair. Call my boy Anthony today. The official truck and trailer repair of...
We are the nation!
Squid Nation.
Rob's Rejects, by the way, debuted today, didn't it? Send in your mugshot and your poor credit score...
Yeah.
And you'll be strongly considered for membership.
I think for the t-shirt design, like, your logo will have, like, bars.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Just a mugshot.
If your credit score is not under 520, you are not eligible.
Have you lost your job recently? You're qualified for Rob's Rejects.
Living in your car.
Yeah.
Give
all right.
Call.
Anyways. So... I think we've got a new member of Squid Nation. I think Jason Garrett is officially on the Squid Nation train.
Well, remember if he becomes a part of it, you can't fire him. It takes forever, so hopefully he's solid.
Well, I'm not Jerry Jones. I'll fire him quickly if I need to. He would be the second redhead behind Drew Butler in there. But that being said, he had some thoughts after Dak Prescott signed that just monster contract, now the highest paid player in the NFL, right before the game started yesterday, or the slate was to kick off because they were the 4 o'clock game. He had some very strong worded thoughts or words for the Dak Prescott haters.
But back to Dak, he just plays the game at a high level. I hear these clowns on TV say he's overrated, he's not in the top 10. Watch the game. Yeah. He's an incredible football player, great leader for that team.
We are not the clowns on TV.
That's not us.
Yeah, there's some clowns on radio that say the same thing, Jason, so you just don't limit to TV.
I was going to say, just replace TV with Twitter. And I feel like that, yeah, you're right, he might be a member of Squid Nation.
I mean, when I heard it, I go... I feel like I wrote it for him, although I would have put a three-letter word in front of
a lot of credit.
I would have put a three-letter word in front of clowns.
Okay,
you can think about
it. Yeah, I got you.
It'll make sense to you. But I agree with his take wholeheartedly. Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback. If you hate on Dak Prescott, then there's probably something wrong with your football acumen because you don't have it. He's a very good player. You cannot blame the entirety of the failures of that franchise on Dak Prescott. He deserves the money.
Agreed.
If you're going to pay the Joe Burrows of the world who can go out and lay eggs, and just like Dak had, Deshaun Watson still has gotten more guaranteed money and has done way less, and has a bigger rap sheet than Dak Prescott does. So, you know, I less
Dak
suspensions.
Dak has no rap sheet.
Well, my point's proven. Lantern Motor Speedway yesterday was the... home of the start of the playoffs. And that track, Mike, as you well know, we've been there. We've been on it. We've been in cars on that track. We've been to races at that track with a new setup. It does not disappoint.
Yeah, it's pretty grippy these days.
And you know, it's funny is we had Joey Logano on the show. You told Joey Logano how the track had kind of gotten with a little bit more grip, that the asphalt had kind of gotten chewed up a little bit.
I said, look, Logano, I said, we're me and Bo are some of the few people that have actually been on there recently. We were on there 2 weeks ago for the NASCAR experience. Shout out to Atlanta Motor Speedway and Brandon Hutchinson. And I said, look, here's some insight. It's grayed up a little bit. It's pretty grippy. And he said, okay, that's good to know, man. I'm glad you let me know that.
Did Joey Logano listen to Mike Johnson? Let's find out.
Logano gets another little shove from Ryan Blaney. And the two Penske's clear Suarez. But Daniel's not giving up. It's Joey Logano clearly out in front. But is there a late run? Remember how this finished. Chastain into the wall, but he's able to keep it going. Has Suarez got something special like he did in February? They're crashing into the wall. Porsche comes out of the checker. They're flying everywhere, and Hamlin is involved. Joey Logano prevails in this first playoff race. His crew chief, Paul Wolf, told us he's a big-time, big-pressure racer, and he delivers.
I like the Brit play-by-play.
You like that?
I
love it. Sound kind of cool.
Big time, yeah.
If Jason Garrett is a member of the Squid Squad, then I think that Joey Logano is probably a member of the Mafia, if I'm being quite honest here. So
we'll
go tit for tat there.
I want to thank the 22 car for being very, very fun and being a good sport in the interview, but you can have him. I will stick to the 12 car in Penske. I don't need that 22.
What driver's a reject then? Who's a miscreant that might?
You can have Austin Cindric. He's got Rob's rejects written all over it.
And that's not true.
But a great
definitely Corey LaJoy. He's still looking for a ride.
Well, I think Austin Dillon might be in there. I mean, you gotta potentially injure people to win races. But
I do want to say too, Joey Logano in his post race presser yesterday was talking about, and I can't remember the exact number he used, but you know the Terra condos right there in Turn 4 at Atlanta Motor Speedway. He was like, you know, I lived in one of those condos for a while. He was like, I mean, this place is special to me. He was like, you know, condo number 708. I can't remember the exact number. It was 807 or 705 or something like that. And I thought that was so cool, man. So he was giving a massive shout out to Atlanta Motor Speedway. But what a great race. It's the hottest ticket on the circuit down there for NASCAR. And, you know, they continue to do good things.
It's cool. It was cool to see. I love seeing the good finishes. I got home and was able to watch the last probably 30 or so laps. And the racing was just amazing nonstop. I tell you what, Mike, I don't know if you get to see it, but the way they're pushing each other there, they have put the word bump back in bump drafting.
Yeah.
Because they are full-fledged shoving you.
Yeah, they definitely are. It's a little bit nerve-wracking if your guys are getting shoved, but it's a good stuff. It's a good product. It's action-packed, man.
All right, my girl just texted me, actually Rob's Rebellion. Not Rob's reject. Rob's Rebellion.
No.
Yes. Rebellion.
No, don't let her talk yet.
Reject sounds so much better. It's got that triple flair. Rebellion just sounds like an overused phrase these days. Everybody's got a Rebellion.
Rejects it is. Sorry, babe. Huntley from Covington won the Atlanta United ticket, so congrats. Huntley, enjoy your night out at Mercedes-Benz Stadium when Atlanta takes on Montreal. All right, going to come back, hand off to the Steakhouse. Got Drew Butler in with a steak. That's coming up next. This has been The Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 929 The Game.